Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always host, Evan Satter, and join my co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSatter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. You also follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page, and already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over there is very much appreciated, as always. And we're continuing on into our 92-93 Phoenix Suns season, looking back on one of the more historic seasons for the Phoenix Suns in their franchise history. And we're joined by Greg Esposito, the Solar Panel. How are you doing today, Greg?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing awesome, and I appreciate coming on, Greg, because I think this is a great guest to have on with Greg, because he was around during this time and really got to see us all up close and personal. Let's start off with talks on Monday's show, Brendan, but Charles Barkley, when that first happened, just what was it like in the city when they saw an MVP, a guy in the prime of his career, Charles Barkley, come to the Phoenix Suns? I have to imagine the city was just freaking out with excitement.
It was crazy. I mean, I was fairly young. I was 10 at the time, but I remember to this day just how crazy the city was with him coming here. I mean, he had just come off the run with the Dream Team. He'd been traded here just prior to the Dream Team, but I believe his press conference wasn't until after the Dream Team. They actually held the press conference in the right out in front of where the team shop is in the arena right now. If you guys remember, the arena hadn't even technically opened yet. They'd never played a Suns game in there. One of the first big events and press events they did there was the announcing of Charles Barkley's trade and acquisition of being in Phoenix. And if you look at some of the pictures and some of the video, you can actually see fans outside looking in through the glass just to catch a glimpse of the press conference. And if you take a step back, that same day when Barkley landed in Phoenix, there were fans at the airport, because this is pre-9/11, so you could go right up to the gate. There were fans at the gate waiting for him, media members. I think it was Todd Walsh, who's now with Fox Sports Arizona. It was one of the reporters that was there that kind of walked with him. May have actually been Tom Leander there too, who walked with him through the terminal interviewing him when he first got to town. I mean, it was, we hear that term mania, you know, whatever, insert name, mania all the time, but it truly was Barkley mania when he was acquired here in Phoenix. And throughout that first season, I've talked to people that were on that team and around that team, and they said it was like you would imagine the Beatles back in the 60s when they came to the U.S. It was like that in Phoenix when it came to Charles Barkley and that team in general in 92-93.
Yeah, I want to ask you too about, so even just going through some of the media names that you just did, I mean, anyone who's lived in the Valley for any amount of time, I think that there's a clear like nostalgia to the way that our community operates, whether it's sports and or politics or anything. I think that, you know, we value people who kind of are our own. And I'm always just struck being around the team now, the way that not only Chuck still holds weight here, and, you know, I think people's eyes widen when he talks about the Suns on TNT still, even though it's been over two decades since he had really anything to do with this franchise in an official capacity, right? But whether it's him or some of the other players from that team, we talked on our first episode of this series on Monday that, like, I remember Cedric Ceballos from being the in-arena host when I was growing up. And you know, Tim Kempton still doing TV for this team. And like, what was it like? Like, did those guys become legends, like, as it was going on? What do you make now, like, with all of this hindsight, of the way that the Valley and sports fans here have kind of like lifted those guys up on a pedestal? That always is interesting. Maybe because I wasn't able to experience it in real time, but what do you make of that, Greg?
Well, look, this is a Suns town. This is a basketball town. I don't care what other teams try to lay claim to things, in particular the Cardinals. I'm a big Cardinals fan. I mean, I as well, but this isn't a football town. This is a basketball town, and it will supersede anything when the Suns are good. And that was what the 92-93 year was. It was a dominant team. You think of 7 seconds or less, right? And we all remember that fondly. It felt like they took over the NBA and the city, but it was 10 times that, if not more, with Barkley in this town. He brought a swagger, he brought an attitude, and with it, it turned every one of the members of that team into legends in one way or another. I mean, you mentioned Kempton on radio. You've got Mark West, who's been in the front office with this team since he left the game. Tom Chambers is on TV. He was on that team. Marley obviously was around as a coach and is still beloved. There's just a huge amount of respect and care for those people on that team because it captured the imagination of the city, right? Cardinals had been here 4 years, or I think 5 seasons going into that Sun season, and they had not actually won anything. I mean, they had been losers. They had the most. Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, at least they made a Super Bowl. They had made the playoffs. Sure, but we're talking at that point, the most games they had won in Arizona was 7. Yeah. Right? I mean, there was no Coyotes. There's no Diamondbacks. ASU was around as they always had been, but we're talking two pony town when it came to sports. And the Suns were the only winning team in town with the only real superstar in town. And it was all of these guys got elevated to stardom. There's all these great stories about there was nowhere to hang out downtown, right? The arena was new down there. That was the first step in kind of trying to rejuvenate things. So there was no nightlife. So what did Dan Marley decide to do? He decided to open a bar blocks away from the arena. So he and the team had somewhere to go after the game. And that opened in 92. And there was just this lure of them partying there after games and hanging out. And there's just so many different things and different little stories like that that just made this team special. And obviously they won. I mean, they were winners. They dominated the league. Barkley was unbelievable that first year in Phoenix, and just was the, that was the peak of his career. He was better than he had been in Philly. He finally had guys around him that were good. We didn't even mention Kevin. I mean, you look at that starting line: Kevin Johnson, Dan Marley, Mark West was in that starting lineup for a small period of time. Oliver Miller was a productive rookie. You looked at Richard Dumas, who had an unbelievable rookie year. There was just so many special moments and special players that year that just got fans beyond excited. And for somebody like me who was 10 at the time, it really is why I became a major Suns fan, because it captured my imagination as a kid. And I would sit there and listen to Al McCoy on a little radio in my room because my parents were too cheap to buy cable. And any home game, I'd sit there and I'd listen to Alan. I'd be engrossed by what was being described to me and how this team played. And, you know, they were the purple gang from Phoenix and they ran at a fast pace. And it was just a type of basketball that we hadn't experienced yet in the Valley. And it was truly special.
Yeah, 62-20 was the Phoenix Suns record once more that season, 92-93. It really helped start a new era for a lot of Suns fans as far as being truly a basketball town like it was for a very long time in Phoenix. But we're going to dive in now into our next segment, which is going to focus in on a lot more fun moments and interesting moments from 1993 season with Greg. But I want to remind you guys, if you're not ready to subscribe to Locked On Suns, we are still going through you guys 3 days a week throughout this current time. We went down a little bit. We're going to still have some awesome shows and some awesome guests lined up here over the next few weeks and months at a time. So appreciate everyone's support, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Bright Side of the Sun, wherever you're listening to us. We appreciate the support here on Locked On Suns. We'll be back to you guys in just a second.
One quick break to tell you guys about MyBookie. Sports have come to a screeching halt with basketball bench and pitchers off the mound, but our friends at MyBookie aren't going to let it get you down. Stay sane and stay entertained with access to your favorite games,
blackjack, roulette, slots, war, and more. It doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or quarantined at home. The fun doesn't have to come to an end with MyBookie. Video poker may be not your thing, but you still need a fix? Well, MyBookie's got you covered with a host of live casino dealers online. That's right. MyBookie has professional dealers at their tables live on site 24/7. Your favorite squad sidelined because of the pandemic? Well, don't even sweat it. MyBookie has partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring you wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, you can always do your part to make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like these. MyBookie is reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA, all one word, to receive a 150% cash bonus on your first deposit. And you can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA one more time. All one word, LOCKEDONNBA, to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You spin, you win, and you get paid.
All righty, let's dive in now, Brendan. Let's introduce this next one with Greg, which is about the Suns and Knicks brawl back from 1993, and a lot of layers that we can peel back like an onion to this one.
Definitely. Something that I had maybe forgotten about. I don't think that I had never heard of this, but Greg, you recommended that we hit on it. It's something we didn't do in our broad recap on Monday. And what's funny to me is always looking back through and seeing the names of people when you go back through NBA history. And it always jumps out to me how small this league is and how people tend to stay in it. Like, you just go through Doc Rivers, heavily involved, Greg Anthony, heavily involved, Steve Javy was the referee, just names that we all know. And then this is a team just 2 years away from, really 1 year away from drafting Monty Williams to become, who would eventually become the Suns head coach. So to me, that is what is funny here, is seeing how many of these people we still are familiar with. But this was like Malice at the Palace before Malice at the Palace, right, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, it was on court. It was, I think, actually a worse brawl than than the Malice at the Palace. It didn't quite spill into the crowd the way that the Malice in the Palace did. But if this happened in modern day NBA, almost everybody on both of these teams would have been suspended for a massive amount of time. And it's just crazy how wild this brawl got. Both benches clear. Coaches are on the court. It starts basically Greg Anthony, who isn't even in the game. He's out injured, right? Comes off the bench and starts fighting Kevin Johnson in his street clothes. It's insane. Anthony Mason mixes up two in the middle of this. And, you know, at first it just looks like, okay, it's a couple guys shoving it. The refs are going to break this up. And then all of a sudden, it just erupts. It just starts to erupt. And the guy that's in the middle of this most, that you wouldn't think looking back, is Danny Ainge. He's like shooting his mouth off at John Starks, trying to get in there and just mix it up. And, you know, it looks like it's quieted down. And then all of a sudden, it starts erupting again. And this is where Greg Anthony comes off the bench and really takes the whole fight up another notch. And it's just, I still can't believe, it's surreal to me, even looking back at it, that it happened the way it did and how bad it got with this group. Another funny kind of Suns connection too. You mentioned some of them, but Pat Riley is the coach of the Knicks, right? And he spent his final season as a player in Phoenix as well. So another random Suns connection there, but
yeah,
you know, so it's actually two separate brawls. It starts as a shoving match and then they resume play again. And then they actually start a second shoving match, which is where things really get a little crazy. They're in the middle of the court. pushing each other. And then, like I said, Greg Anthony runs onto the court, shoves Kevin Johnson in street clothes. Kevin Johnson's trying to throw punches at him. Everybody piles on top. You got Sed Sabalos and Paul Westphal trying to break it up on top of the pile. Drod Mustaf, who winds up becoming infamous for more violent things than this, eventually it starts shoving guys. And I highly recommend you go back and watch the video for Greg Anthony's shirt too.
That's what I was just gonna say. Yes,
Greg Anthony is wearing a shirt with nautical symbols on it, right? Full sleeve,
and gets walked off the court before it's all closed off. Like the refs don't even have control, and he leaves. He starts the whole thing, and then he walks away.
Because he knows that basically I just got my money's worth. I'm in trouble now.
Yeah.
He walks out, and fun story about that. I was writing a piece back when I worked for the Suns on the brawl and the whole 92-93 season. And I commented on Twitter about how ridiculous Greg Anthony's shirt was. I said the most egregious thing about the entire brawl was Greg Anthony's shirt. And I tagged him, right? He replies back, "Yeah, that was one heck of an ugly shirt." So even he knew, in retrospect, that it was pretty bad in terms of it. But and Kevin Johnson, I'm actually watching this here, rewatching it as we're talking about it. But Kevin Johnson actually, to start the second brawl, drops his shoulder into Doc Rivers and basically plows through him. And that's really what gets the second brawl going. And I'm telling you now, if this happened, they would have suspended both teams for a majority of both teams for significant time, because we talk about, in Suns lore, how Boris Diaw and Amari Stoudemire get off the bench in a playoff game, right? They take a step off and they're suspended. Well, both teams, both benches completely on the court during this. It's a surreal moment in what was a crazy and fun season, but this is one of those that stands out for sure.
What I found really interesting too, Greg, even more of an overarching point outside of this brawl, is this team, you include Charles Barkley, Kevin Johnson, Danny Ainge, they had the grit and toughness to like go up against these teams that wanted to be aggressive, like the Knicks and the Pistons and the Heat back in the day. Like this Suns team in 1993 had that identity where they weren't going to take anything from anybody. And that this night kind of showed that.
Yeah, they definitely did. I mean, the Suns over the years have gotten the reputation of kind of being a softer team, but I wouldn't have messed with that 92-93 Suns team. Like you mentioned, they had some guys in there that weren't afraid to mix it up. This was proof of it, and there wasn't a tougher team in the early 90s than those Knicks teams. I mean, they were the kind of team that you were afraid of at times, because they had so many guys ready to brawl and big bruisers, the Anthony Masons of the world. And so that Suns team didn't back down from anybody. This was proof of it.
Another comparison before we transition out of this, or not comparison, connection. Doing this show this year is also funny, because the Suns have a potential to draft Greg Anthony's son in the upcoming draft. So just interesting there. I wanted to go through a quick quote or two. We have a story actually from about 5 or 6 years ago on this brawl over at Bright Side of the Sun. Jerry Colangelo said, "I've never seen anything like that in all my 27 years in the league." This was what he said at the time. "It looked like it was going out of control. It got a little scary there for a minute. There was a point where it seemed like the officials had to calm things down. But when Anthony came off the bench, then it really broke loose. Everybody seemed to agree that Greg Anthony should get suspended. I loved Kevin Johnson's description of this whole thing too. How can some scrub come off the bench in street clothes and just take a cheap shot? I set a good pick on Doc Rivers and he got flattened. I didn't try to hurt him. He chased me." I think that you watch the video, not a normal pick, certainly a foul, and very much the way of Kevin Johnson to describe it that way. But let's go for it.
And Kevin Johnson was playing defense. So
yeah, not a pick.
Yeah, that's not a pick.
That's just called slamming yourself into somebody.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's dive into KJ a little bit more here in the final segment of our show. Just a quick reminder before that, though, as we all spend a little bit more time, or a lot more time, at home, you can listen to our show on your smart speaker, whether it's Amazon, Google, either way. Say the activation word and then say play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns. It will cue up our latest episode. Maybe you missed Monday's overall recap of the 92-93 season. Catch up that way, or tune in on Friday. We're going to rewatch some of the games from this year's playoff run and reevaluate it all these years later. But like I said, tell your smart speaker, play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns to tune in on your smart speaker. Be right back. So one of the things, Greg, that struck me, and you said that you wanted to talk about it too, was it almost reminded me one of the other seasons we thought about talking about here was 2013-14, and that was a year where we all remember Bledsoe being acquired the previous season, but he wasn't around for most of it. He missed almost half the year. Similar this year with KJ, where I think it was, from what I could tell, a combination of groin and hamstring strains that weren't properly taken care of and got worse over the course of the season. But where does KJ play into all of this for you? He was healthy by the time the playoffs came around, but missed a lot of the year.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, that became what kind of KJ was known for later in his career, were those type of hamstring injuries that hampered him throughout this, and groin injuries. He only played 49 games this season. When a lot of people think back on this, they think, oh, you had prime KJ. It was everything. You know, this lineup was stacked, and they really didn't have prime KJ. It was one of the worst statistical seasons he had in a Phoenix Suns uniform. He averaged
the All-Star game.
Yeah, I mean, he averaged 16 points and 7.8 assists, right? And you think, oh, well, those are great numbers. But you look the year before, he had almost 20 points a game and 10.7 assists. And the year before that, 22 points a game. So you weren't talking prime KJ in this run. You have to. I've always wondered if Barkley had gotten here a year or two earlier with prime KJ, do they actually win it then? Because, you know, KJ would draw a lot of the assignments later in the year in the finals defensively on Jordan. He'd play Jordan a lot in that, but he was not, even though he came back, he was still not fully himself and hadn't fully recovered in terms of that. So that's a big what if to me in this season, is if you had a fully healthy Kevin Johnson, what was this team really capable of? I mean, they win 62 games with him only playing in 49 games and not really being healthy even in those games that he played. How much better could this team have been? What could this path have looked like? And what would that eventual six-game series against the Bulls in the finals, how could that have played out differently if KJ was healthy? I mean, they lose the first two games at home in that series, so they basically nullify their home court advantage right out the gate, and that the entire playoffs. I mean, it wasn't an easy run. They almost lose to the AC Lakers in five games. They go down 2-0 in that series, and you have to get Paul Westphal's unbelievable best quote in Arizona sports history, his guarantee that they're going to come back and win the next three games, and they do. They go six games against the Spurs. It's a hard-fought series, and then they go seven games against the Sonics in the Western Conference Finals. If you have a healthy KJ, maybe it's an easier path in those first three series. You have fresher legs against the Bulls. Things play out differently. It's just such a huge what-if that I think gets overlooked with this team when looking back on it, because you hear a lot of talk about the what-if of, well, if Danny Ainge actually guards John Paxson in game six, maybe they hit, he doesn't make that three, there's a game seven. But to me, the bigger what if is if Kevin Johnson is a healthy version of himself, how does this all play out?
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point there, Greg, about Kevin Johnson, because you go and look at the rest of the seasons there. He played 49, like you mentioned, that year, but 67, 47, 56, 70, and 50 before he eventually retires in 98, 99, and comes back for his six-game stint in 99, 2000, the Phoenix Suns. But he was never the same really after the year prior, where he played in 78 games, and he averaged 20 points, 11 assists per game. But Greg, you had a really fun story you wanted to hit on with us about Tim Kempton and Cedric Ceballos, their shirts in the playoff run, and how wacky and kind of out there they were.
Oh, well, yeah. So if you guys wind up looking and watching some of those playoff games in your next episode, or anybody listening goes and looks up some of this stuff on YouTube, pay close attention to the bench during that playoff series. Tim Kempton and Cedric Ceballos weren't on the active roster. I believe it was injuries for both guys. And there are just some really just ugly, ugly shirts that they're both wearing. And I always wondered about it. And when I started working with for the team, I actually asked Kempton, you know, what one shirt in particular sticks out in my mind. I believe he wore it in the finals. It was a button-down shirt that was short sleeve that was white and had bright green apples all over it, like just atrocious and ridiculous, right? And it never made sense to me anytime I would see it when they'd play these replays. So I asked Kempton, and apparently he and Ceballos had a kind of a competition going on, a bet, I believe, that of who could wear the uglier shirt during the playoff run. And I think they both tied because they both had just the ugliest shirts. It's an obscure thing, right? But I think it speaks to the team, right? The camaraderie of this group, how much they had fun together and enjoyed it, despite being a lot of turmoil with this team. Oliver Miller, who's in his rookie season, winds up having to be admitted to a hospital for weight management because he was having issues. Richard Dumas was plagued with addiction issues, and they had to be mindful of that throughout this year. But even with all those kind of things and the KJ injury that we talked about, they still found ways to have fun, and they had a fairly cohesive unit. And I think that speaks to why they were such a special team and why they were able to dominate as much as they did in the regular season and through three rounds of the playoffs.
Well, to go full circle here, we started off this show talking about Barkley and everything you're saying about just the tone, the vibe, the essence of the team. I mean, the descriptors are all one and the same with how we think of Charles to me. I think, you know, a player of that magnitude, a person of that magnitude coming off of, you know, the heightened level of fame that he earned from the Dream Team and everything that came with Charles, I think really rubbed off on some of these guys and you know, it's the NBA. The teams take the essence of their star player, and there's maybe been few stars ever like Charles in this league. And that's actually what I wanted to close on was, you know, one thing, like, yes, you were a kid when this season unraveled here, but you got to be around a lot of these people being a member of this organization at one point. And I'm just curious what that was like for you and how much this season, like you walk through the hall between locker rooms that, you know, a lot of Suns fans maybe haven't gotten the privilege to do, but we do as media. And this team is just such a core part of the history of this franchise. And not to mention all the ways we already said that so many of these players remain involved. What was it like to relive some of that through the players and coaches and everything and Al McCoy, all these people that were around back then? And I guess we're doing best seasons in franchise history, so I want to hear about all that, and then I want to know if you think this is the best season in franchise history.
From my standpoint, it was a privilege and an honor to get to be around a lot of these guys and hear these stories and get to know them. One of my favorite things I got to do, there's a moment in this season later in the year where the team's in Portland. They're down with 0.4 seconds on the clock, right? And Westfall draws up a play where he throws it. He has his inbounder throw it off the backboard. Said Ceballos fake that he's going up to try to alley-oop it. Make sure nobody touches the ball because it hits the hoop, the clock doesn't start. And Barkley comes in and flicks this ridiculous shot to win the game, right? One of my favorite moments. And while I was there, I got to talk to Westfall, Barkley, Mark West and a couple others about that moment, put together a piece, an oral history on it. And I believe it's still on YouTube. And it's just one of my, it was just such an honor to get to talk to these guys and relive obscure moments like that and larger moments as well with them. This was a team that defined why the Valley loves basketball, and those players still to this day define that. Another moment, if you guys don't mind and want to indulge me, the first time I got to meet Barkley while I was working there, I broke one of the big rules that you're not supposed to do, right? I just said, screw it. I'm asking this guy for an autograph because I've waited my entire life to meet him. And I had a ticket stub from, I was at the game when I was a kid when he scored his 20,000th point. So I get introduced to Chris Mallory, who was one of the community relations guys, introduces me to Chuck. And I say to him, look, man, I know this is highly unprofessional, but I grew up in the Valley, big fan of yours. Told him I saw that game. I pulled the ticket out and I go, would you mind signing this for me? And he looks at me, he goes, man, that is not unprofessional at all. I'm more than happy to do that for you. I appreciate guys like you, you know, that have been fans your whole life. And it's cool that you get to work for the team. And that moment, you know, you worry when you meet an idol, somebody that, mm-hmm. that you've known so much about, and you get that moment to meet them. I didn't regret it. It was nice too. I was fearful because I'd heard a lot of Charles' stories that maybe this wouldn't turn out the best. Well, it did. And then later that night, I wound up at Marley's after the game, and Barkley, Marley, Chambers, Mark West, a bunch of the 92-93 guys are there, and Chambers pulls me behind the bar, and I get a picture with him and Barkley behind the bar at Marley's. They're not fully, you know, they're inebriated. I'm sure stone cold sober because I just finished working, and I have that hanging in my office to this day because it's awesome. It's just surreal. And when a group like that means so much to a city, it's pretty cool when they turn out to be pretty cool as well. In terms of, is this the best Suns team ever? Yes, in terms of success on the court. I think the 94-95 team that came a few years later could argue that it was the most talented team in Suns history, the biggest what if. But the best team, I think it is this 92-93 team with a couple of the 7 seconds or less teams right on their heels.
This has been a really fun episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it here with Espo. You guys can follow him on Twitter at Espo and go over and listen to the Suns Solo Come Up podcast with he, Tim Tompkins, and Dave King. Greg, appreciate the time.
Yeah, anytime, guys. I know we're all scrambling for things to talk about, but anytime I can come on, I'm happy to and talk anything Suns with you.